The Around the NFL Podcast is running out of money tags.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What's happening? Good to be back with you.
The boss back in the big chair.
You guys did a great job, though, on the show. I listened to it.
I was stunned that you listened to it.
I listened to it. I'm not proud of this, but I think it was the first episode I listened to since last offseason, which is a while. I know Mark likes to re-listen to them. It kind of creeps me out to re-listen to them.
In a certain mood, I will re-listen to them, like, you know, late at night, and they're quite delightful at times.
I just get annoyed by myself, and then I also think, like, there's only so much time on the planet. I can listen to other podcasts or read or something else. I was already in that room and had these great conversations.
I'm a little disappointed because that's an opportunity for you to listen for the first time to my jokes that you trample over during
I will re-listen to the show on occasion as a method of taking self-notes about my own performance, or whether to judge each of you guys for various things, or praise you internally. And the Irishman, of course,
certainly not externally.
Irish has a good chance of getting up on Mount Rushmore as a producer. As we know, there's one vacant slot. Pick up the chisels. That's his theme music, apparently. He's really looking to get out there.
No, that's breaking news. I've never heard that before. That's the first time.
You have breaking news?
No, that is breaking
news. Oh. What you said was breaking news.
What?
I have a good shot of getting up there.
Oh, I see.
This is why Dan needs to listen to it twice.
We need a higher bar for breaking news.
Yeah, I didn't think that was... I assumed you were aware that you were in the running to be...
Well, I was in the running, but you said I have a good chance.
Well, you have a shot.
That was anecdotal.
Well, this is a blind spot for me anyways. I'm not proud of it. I do think you can get probably better at your job by listening to it, but it was an informative show. It was a lot of fun. It was the debut of Johnny Chuckles, which that was...
Hey, over here! I'll make your bellies hurt! I'm going to make you feel your sides are going to hurt so much because I can make you laugh.
Very concerning, Dan.
Pro Football Talk just wrote a post on Brandon's breaking news.
And you, Greg, we were curious. Your thoughts, of course, Mark, Apple Polisher Sessler, he had a segment during the last podcast where he spoke of various things he had observed and wanted to report.
Well, it was terrific. It was terrific to have a surrogate here representing my interest.
Proud of yourself, Mark?
I didn't even need to hold a meeting, which I usually do with Mark after these days, I guess, and where he updates me. He did it for me. I was already at home. I didn't even need to wait until the next day. So I thought it was accurate and informative. And probably the truest... go ahead, Mark. You seem like you want to talk.
Whoa.
I don't want to interrupt. I liked where you're going. The idea that these two are calling me an apple polisher, it's simply because they were subjects in the report. Continue, Greg.
Well, that's true. You did say Dan did a great job. I think the truest thing you said is I knew this segment would go south if I criticized Dan.
Yes. You have to be strategic when discussing Dan.
No, I mean... Listen, was it the best segment? No. Was it the worst segment? No. I wasn't going to stand in
That's
the way.
That's what I'm aiming for. Way. I'm just aiming to strike right in the middle.
All right. So this is the Wednesday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, sponsored by no one, loved by thousands across the world, feared by some shadowy league figures upstairs.
Tens of thousands.
Beholden. To no one.
Absolutely. No. Actually, one of our shadowy league figures confronted me in the lobby yesterday, and she said to me, what is that beholden to no one stuff? Like, you trying to scare away sponsors?
Maybe that shadowy league figure should find us a sponsor, and then we'd be beholden.
No, I just, what I did? I put on my helmet, and I hopped on my Harley, and I just tore off. Can't help it if I'm a bad boy.
Peeled away from, I think, the only female shadowy league figure that exists.
She is a riser.
Well, no, that I
fast
that
riser in NFL media.
Behind the scenes, we normally know when you say shadowy league figure.
Oh, you know exactly who I'm
someone.
Talking about.
This is the first time that I can recall that, and I witnessed this conversation right before you peeled off on your metaphorical
I thought Mark
motorbike
was taking a surprising shot
literal.
At the NFL's gender.
Well, he kind of was.
No, not at all. Thing. Very equal hiring practices, Greg.
Today's show. So anyway, the bottom line is. Beholden to no one. you know, come at us, Dick's Sporting Goods, Reebok,
is Reebok
Dell right? guy. We want the Dell dude to sponsor us, not even Dell.
Pre-show grade?
B. We were going to talk about, you know, we talked about on our last show, because he is the boss, we had to try.
I show back up and pre-show grade goes down.
You know, we love Connie Fox. No, we did fearless predictions that we may live to regret. So, you know, Wes, Sess, and myself gave ours. Connie Fox gave hers. We'd like to hear from Greg on his prediction, so we'll get to that a little bit later. And then we have a guest in the studio. You know, we don't have guests a lot, but when this man reached out to us, we said, oh, we got to get him in here. He's Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, host of the Ross Tucker Football podcast, and probably about 7 other jobs. He's one of those guys that has 14 jobs.
He's a hustler.
You know, we met with him for lunch earlier today. He's like, oh, I got a meeting with this guy and that girl. And it's like, whoa, what are we doing wrong? I guess we're just cranking out content. That's it.
I'm impressed with the ability to fly across the country to do multiple shows, meet with sales entities. You know, we are very, by comparison, extremely lazy. It's concerning.
And we'll do some news. We'll hit some news. And before we do that, we check behind the glass with the Irishman, formerly now, who really does have, I'd say, a chance at getting on Mount Rushmore.
I appreciate that. And to me, at least, that was breaking news. Well, what I'm wondering is, I wasn't in Mark's report on Monday. I wonder what he would have said about my performance.
Not much to say. You did fine. I mean, it wasn't exemplary.
It's okay. It's good for you because when your producer gets on the Sizzler's bad side, he'll shoot you the eyes and point at you. You'll know when you did a bad job.
Yeah, like, Brandon, you're almost never on my bad side. He's a workhorse.
Yeah.
You're like a long snapper just trying to – you want to stay out of the net.
I want to fly under the radar.
Yeah. Until you're on the mountainside.
That's it.
Let's do some news.
You are the wink of stink. Goodbye.
Did you hear that news, by the way?
I did, and I think it said a lot about that concept that you have mentioned that before on the show, but
no one remembered. Yeah, no, you know, I took mental note of that.
That
actually
says something. No, I remembered. I listened to it, and I said, yeah.
No, I took note of that with Sess and Wes, kissing cousins, not remembering, because it made me look foolish.
That's what made you look foolish.
I brought back.
Step over that one, Wes.
We gave Wes the chuckles. Hey, Wes, good one. A real belly buster. I'm thinking about bringing back, you are the weakest link. Goodbye.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Exactly. So we'll see if that happens. I haven't formally announced, but of course, coming off the Dean Scream, I have it's like when PTA, Paul Thomas Anderson, after he made Boogie Nights, he was given all the power in the world to make whatever he wanted next, and he made Magnolia, which was like a sprawling 3-hour epic, a movie I love. Rewatched it over the weekend.
The ending is absurd.
You, on the other hand, created Johnny Chuckles.
Right. Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
This Johnny Chuckles has legs. Concentrate on him and ignore the weakest link.
Yeah. Thank you, Wes. Greg, you know what? I don't need those shots, those pot shots.
I'm already regretting bringing up Johnny Chuckles. On.
Welcome back, Greg.
I love that guy. He's a ventriloquist dummy, by the way.
Yeah, he is. He's a crazy ventriloquist.
Let's start with the news. Investigators are looking into whether Aqib Talib, the star Broncos cornerback, shot himself. Oh, no. He pulled a Plaxico, potentially. Talib was released from the hospital after suffering a gunshot wound to his right leg Sunday morning in Dallas. And investigators are looking into the shooting. They're trying to determine whether Talib had accidentally shot himself, Rap Sheet reported Tuesday, citing some sources close to the probe, like that term. Talib arrived at the Broncos facility Wednesday to be evaluated by team medical staff. Gary Kubiak, the Broncos coach, told reporters Tuesday that there is no timeline for Talib's return from the injury, per James Palmer of NFL Media. The 3-time Pro Bowler was released from the hospital Monday, Kubiak said.
It's a problem. It's a problem for Aqib Talib. I think a bigger problem than we probably thought initially because of the legal implications. It is a felony to carry a weapon in public without a license in a place that sells alcohol in Texas. He said he was drunk. That even if you do have a license, it's illegal to carry a firearm while you're drunk. So, he, you know, that this could be something, especially looking back on his history. I don't know if he would count as a repeat offender because the offenses were so long ago. But the NFL has taken this gun, you know, gun laws very seriously.
And let's not forget that Plaxico Burress went to jail for like a year and a half or so.
That was New York, though.
Yeah,
that was
accidentally, the states do differ sometimes.
Yes, after accidentally shooting himself in the leg when he had his gun tucked into his sweatpants. And we will get a real look at how the law works in different parts of the United States because this happening in Texas. I would almost think it would be applauded in Texas. Just, you know, guns. I love guns in Texas. But don't expect anything like that to happen to Tlaib, but he could certainly get in some trouble for this.
So he implicated himself by admitting he was drunk?
That seems like an implication, although they still would need an official. I don't know if they would. I don't know if they did a toxicology report. You would think that they did. I mean, there's a lot going on here.
I think he's going to be suspended regardless just because of his history.
We will track this story. Obviously, bad news for the defending champions either way. Moving on, Mike Silver was on Total Access, which is the flagship program of NFL Network co-hosted by Lindsay Rhodes, good friend of the show. Silver was speaking with Dan Helly, the other co-host of Total Access, on Tuesday.
Need to get Helly on here.
We should. We absolutely should.
Great guy.
Let's make a point of that. But Mike Silver was at Niners camp on the same day that Colin Kaepernick made his on-field debut, taking part in individual drills as he's working his way back from three different off-season surgeries. But Silver came away with a feeling that Blaine Gabbert is the, quote, heavy favorite to be the team starting quarterback in week one. He went as far as to say that there's, quote, allegedly a quarterback competition. Here's what Silver added. He's loved in this locker room. He did a lot of good things last year, and I'd be shocked if he's not the starter in the opener. Your thoughts, Wes? I know you've thought this as a possibility for some time.
Yeah, I think we've had Gabbert as the heavy favorite in this podcast. And I think the sentence that stood out to me was the locker room sentence. We pointed out so many times about the hatred between Kaepernick and the front office, but we also have said in the past that locker room was divided on Colin Kaepernick. And maybe the teammates don't want him. Maybe a portion of the teammates don't want him quarterbacking.
Yeah, it's like players, teammates understand the necessary desire to make your money while you can as a player. But if you're the quarterback, it's just different than any other position. And what is Gabbert competing against? He's competing against an injured quarterback who's not practicing, who has done a bad job this offseason of connecting or reconnecting with teammates and publicly tried to get out of the organization. If you're Chip Kelly trying to establish a foundation, especially with your offense, why would Gabbert not absolutely be in the lead right now? Everything would need to change for him not to be.
Totally agree with both of you. And yet when I heard Colleen's very bold prediction, what's the official title on this?
It is Fearless Predictions We May Live to Regret.
I thought she could end up getting that right because, okay, Blaine Gabbert's the favorite to start week one. That's week one. Chip Kelly has proven he can create offense. And before we get too worried about who's the heavy favorite for week one, they haven't faced any pass rush. Colin Kaepernick started practicing this week. They're going to start facing a pass rush in August, and we'll see how Blaine Gabbert, that's been a problem for him in the past. We'll see how he adapts to Chip Kelly's system. He hasn't been in it yet.
I had a similar feeling to that the best thing that Kaepernick has going for him right now is that it is Blaine Gabbert he's going up against, and maybe Gabbert gets it together and becomes a good starter. Mike Silver referenced Alex Smith as potentially a similar path. Blaine Gabbert could be a guy that gets his career going a little bit later than people expected. And part of me also feels a little bit for Colin Kaepernick because he's obviously not the most charismatic guy that easily connects with people, whether it's the media or his teammates. So now, once your confidence gets shaken as a player, it's easy. I could see how he gets in kind of a rough spot in a clubhouse or a locker room. So I feel for the dude a little bit. He's not like a bad guy. We haven't heard like terrible stories about him.
But we don't need to feel too bad. He's making a hill of cash and this report is about where they are now.
Yeah.
He has all the opportunity to flip this up. Bad teams start like two quarterbacks will each start 10 and 6 games. I mean, he's going to...
Mark, you're like T.O.'s agent when he had that pills situation. She's like, Terrell Owens has 25 million reasons to be alive.
That is exactly...
Money is everything.
That is exactly what I'm like.
By the way,
nailed
best
it.
Thing Blaine Gabbert has going for him is the last year and a half of Colin Kaepernick's game tape.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But the reason, and that's totally fair, yet the reason why I still hold out hope for Colin Kaepernick is that first year and a half of his game tape, which was something else, which we thought he was one of the most talented guys in the entire league.
Colin hung onions, though. It was a nice onion hanger.
I think it was a good one. I liked it.
I thought it was good.
Speaking of hanging onions, Trent Richardson, the Ravens running back, was asked, you know, we're not even sure he's going to make the team. He probably has an uphill challenge, but he was asked by CSN Mid-Atlantic recently how he saw his career ending. This is what T-Rich had to say. Putting on a yellow jacket, people wrote him off. He came back and did some amazing things. He always had the pedigree. He just had to get back to the guy that we know. Now, this made him the butt of many a joke in social media, and there was a guy downstairs that's a big Alabama. He went to Alabama where T-Rich went. He was saying, oh, why is everyone making fun of T-Rich? You know, what else is he supposed to say? Well, you can say other things. If someone asks you that question, you could say, well, my goal here is to be a part of this team, be productive, and we're going to win games, and I'll get, you know, and get my confidence back. Yeah, you know, lay low on the Canton stuff. That's a bad job by T-Rich. You got to know what to say.
I hear you.
I thought Connor struck the right chord in this article. Stop piling on. You don't make fun of fat guys because they're fat. That's just not funny.
Well, the question was asked, in a perfect world, where would your career end up? So imagine if they asked us in our perfect world. It would have, I mean, I can only imagine.
They didn't say perfect world.
That was the question.
How do you see your career ending?
In a perfect world, if you listen to the clip. That's how you answer the question. You know, Mark, I would love to hear Mark's answer of how his career ends in a perfect world. It would include, some of America 3, floating...
One thing about
the wilderness.
I don't know what I would say. With T-Rich, it's become this cottage industry just to shred this guy, and he's a reason for a lot of the reason that's happening. But extremely young, does not have a lot of wear on the tires at this point. If he actually is focused on getting in shape, I do think I'm going to win this sandwich bet with Dan.
You're back in.
I'm not back in because I already paid it off.
You want to make it another sandwich?
A year ago, his head was in a completely bizarre place. If he does care about his career, that is probably 80% of it with Trent Richardson.
Although everything we've heard, his head is exactly in the right place now.
I'm saying if. I didn't
IHOP.
Say it is. Well, you know what? Keep ripping him to shreds. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, because you gotta know what to say. And part of being a professional athlete,
but the question is important. The question tweak that Greg introduced is different than, hey, what kind of player are you? It's like, in an ideal world, what's he going
to
say? I want to be a mid-tier running back
that
made it out
after
two seasons.
You don't have to answer.
I want to work
you
my
don't
way
have
up
to
the
do
middle
it.
Management.
It's, anything he said would have been ripped. If he said, I want to be a guy that just collects a paycheck, we would have ripped it.
No, he could. Well, then you would get ripped for that. But if he would have said, I want to make this roster and I want to be a contributor, I don't know what's going to happen down the line. There's a smart way to answer it, and the way that gets you lampooned, continues to be the butt of a joke rather than a guy trying to save his career. That's all I'm saying.
I'm not his PR agent. I just think that it's kind of like he's...
I think you are his PR agent.
No, he's trapped in a tough spot. It's like whatever he says, Twitter's going to erupt and just take the guy to town. So you're right. Maybe he should just go absolutely radio silence.
We know from the last 3 years he's not good at getting himself out of a trap spot.
Moving on.
Poor T-Rich.
Just be quiet, T-Rich.
No.
Make the team. Do what you can, buddy.
Two sandwiches coming my way if he
just
does, Dan.
Just answering questions.
It will never happen, Mark. You want to do another sandwich?
Keep that sound bite.
Yeah, please keep it.
I got it.
Yeah, thank you.
Both guys are extremely confident right now.
All right. Gio Bernard of the Cincinnati Bengals, the running back, has reached agreement with the team on a 3-year, $15.5 million contract extension. Rap Sheet reports, per a source involved with the situation, the team later confirmed the extension. It runs now through 2019. This is a former second-round pick who, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Cincinnati backfield here now, Sessler, because we have what looked like maybe the best tandem in the league. Now it's a little up in the air. Gio Bernard's a nice player, but who knows what you have with Jeremy Hill at this point. But do you like the move to lock down Gio Bernard?
I do, because I know that in our bold predictions last week, the Bengals sounded like they were slighted. They were not. I think the Bengals have a great talent, and when you're an organization that knows how to draft well and nurture young players, you see them signing second contracts. And, you know,
well, they were still slighted. You said the Browns were going to finish ahead of either them or the Ravens, basically.
Right. It was a bold prediction. It was not based on mathematical logic. I do think that there's a shot of it happening, but it doesn't mean that I think the Bengals aren't incredibly talented. They have probably done a better job of amassing talent than 90% of the league over the last three seasons, and Bernard's one of those players.
I think he's a rare player with a lot of fame that's underrated. At 1,200 yards in two of his 3 years, I think this was an amazing deal. It was an extension, so they're still paying him only $1 million for this year. I'm sure he got some money up front, but it was tacking years onto the deal at $5 million a year. If I was in fantasy leagues, you know, I'm taking Bernard over Jeremy Hill. It's not that close. I think he's going to have a much better season, and I think he's a little more powerful than people give him credit for.
Here's the list of running backs who had a better season than Gio Bernard last year.
Okay.
Doug Martin, for sure. Adrian Peterson, Todd Gurley, Devonta Freeman, that's the list.
Wow.
And a bad year for running backs, but your point is well.
No, you're right. It was a bad year. And you could say David Johnson for a month looked better, but
sure.
For an entire season, Gio Bernard was a top five running back.
He's a game changer.
Are we counting out Jeremy Hill as
I'm not.
A workhorse? I'm
I
not
think
either.
Hugh Jackson's
I am
offense
as a workhorse.
Last year. Hugh Jackson's offense last year changed from the year before. They went to a lot more three wide sets, and they went to a running system that fit Gio Bernard's style a lot better than Jeremy Hill's. And Jeremy Hill had a bad year. He tiptoed to the line of scrimmage.
Well, I am as a workhorse because he's on the same team as Gio Bernard, and I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice to really reduce his snaps below 500, 600, 700 snaps. Gio Bernard is too good. You have to keep him on the field.
Moving on.
Greg raising his hands in victory.
Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert. Trope alert.
You guys ready? My notes are missing.
You want me to set you up?
Yeah, go ahead.
Devin Funchess.
I forgot what it was.
Is light years ahead of where he was at this time.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Chris Wessling. Light years ahead is one of my favorite offseason tropes. I love when guys are, quote, because it's always, quote, light years ahead. And you never hear light years used ever, like in society otherwise. But only in OTAs or mini camps does that term get thrown around. And it's always some guy that it kind of stinks.
Usually a wide receiver.
Wide outs.
Right.
I'm sure you'll see it with Doriel Green Beckham in a week or two.
Mm. Right. And I'm light years ahead.
Right. He's not just better at route running. He has expanded the space-time continuum, and he's further ahead of the human, you know, race than the rest of us.
Isn't it maybe kind of a shot at where he was last year, which is probably significantly behind other rookies?
It's fair.
I don't remember Riverboat Ron saying he's light years behind everyone else last year.
Well, the weird thing about wide receivers, it is definitely the term light years is up there with let's open the kimono above the tree. What is it, above the treetops? All this other
wait, what's,
nonsense.
Wait, what's let's open the kimono?
We have our
like,
own
sounds
list.
Sounds like how you get on like a sex offender.
Well, no, in these NFL media, in this job, you have to go to these meetings, and some of these corporate types,
corporate,
you know, they're working off a different dictionary, and they'll drop a term here or there where you're left wondering what is happening to the human language. And let's open the kimono is one
what?
Of these. Let's be real honest about whatever topic we're about to discuss. Hey guys, let's open the kimono.
So it's like referencing like I'm going to show you my D.
Right. What? That's
well.
Really
are
a
you
deal.
Wearing a kimono, Dan?
Hey, let's.
I don't know.
Pull our
I don't
pants.
Know. Who is wearing a kimono? Though.
It's a terrible term. I didn't cook it up. On
is
my,
it a classier way than saying let's pull our pants down?
I think it's a less classy way of saying, hey guys, can we cut the BS and be honest?
I think Sessler
you're bringing a kimono into it.
Had a few drinks or something and was stumbling around, you know, Japantown or something.
Mm. No, that is
my new favorite is fire hose of data.
Or this snackable content.
Snackable
I heard
content.
The other day.
Let's keep it above the treetops.
There you go.
Yeah. Keep it above the treetops.
I will say one thing though, and you mentioned wide receivers. I mean, a lot of big name wide receivers from year one to year two make the jump. I looked this up. Dez Bryant, year one, 561 yards, big jump year two. Fitzgerald, 780 as a rookie. That was better than most. Brandon Marshall went from 309 yards to 1,300. I mean, it, along with tight end, that is one position where you see growth in the second season.
True.
All right, guys, let's move on to some odds and ends. Odds and ends, odds and ends. Everybody loves some odds and ends.
Everybody.
Reuben Randall started 16 games last season, had about 800 receiving yards, 8 touchdowns. Now he's got a fresh start with the Eagles after an up-and-down run with the Giants. Some talk that he's going to be the number one role on the outside of the formation under Doug Peterson, with Jordan Matthews seemingly destined to remain in the slot. Greg, does that surprise you?
It does. Well, they moved Matthews outside for the start of OTAs, and this is where, you know, we made fun of that nothing can come out of OTAs. Some little nuggets. This is a good example that it sounded like they put Matthews on the outside, and Doug Peterson, the coach, basically said, look, he's better inside. We've tried him out there. And then he went out of his way to really talk up Randall as someone that surprised him. And who knows? We'll see what happens, but he does have more production than anyone else in that wide receiver mix, including Huff and Nelson Aguilar or whatever. I think he's starting for your Eagles, whether you like it or not.
Elsewhere.
See how long that lasts.
Elsewhere, Timmy Jernigan, the Ravens defensive tackle, says that he'll be a bigger person than Warren Sapp after, and, you know, Warren, come back to us, buddy. The Ravens tweeted out, Timmy Jernigan has changed his number to 99 as a tribute to Warren Sapp, to which Warren Sapp replied, at Ravens, how do I stop this? And then Jernigan, who had a relationship with Sapp dating back to when he was drafted in 2014, he slid out of the first round because of a report of a diluted drug test. Sapp, who, of course, famously slid down the first round in 1995 because of reports of a failed drug test or drug tests, reached out to Jernigan. They talked a little bit and maybe texted. But Warren Sapp was upset that Timmy Jernigan did not reach out to him and contact him with this decision to change from 97 to 99, to which I say, that's some exhausting Warren Sapp behavior right there. Come on.
That was the perfect word for it in your post. Exhausting. I mean, if we're going to talk about current players not wanting, they shouldn't open their mouths about their personal goals, this is one tweet that Warren Sapp would have done himself a favor by not sending. It was, you're a Hall of Famer. It's just ridiculous. Like, I mean, the way this was someone who was your friend, who he's trying to honor you, and this is how you respond.
I don't know if he was a friend, but he at least was someone that they were on good terms with each other.
There was contact. I don't know. It just seems like a kind of wild shot in the dark.
And I don't know what's going on with Warren Sapp. He got let go from NFL Network, and I don't know if he has a job right now. But he has to have something better to do than to pick on some guy that only viewed him as a role model.
Gargamel-level behavior out of Warren Sapp.
Maybe he doesn't have something better to do. Maybe that's the biggest problem here. He's bored.
Just for the record, Warren, this is Greg Rosenthal. I didn't say anything during this segment.
Coward. And that's odds and ends. Sing it, Wes.
Odds and ends. Odds and ends.
That is my favorite 2 seconds of this entire podcast.
You got to keep going, Wes. You can't just say it twice.
I'm the worst singer. Greg immediately buried his head in his hands.
Greg, you shook his confidence. Sorry. You're his boss.
I already have no. I'm the worst singer.
Can we do one more shot, Greg?
I have ever told you.
I do that a lot. I do things like that a lot.
Have I ever told you about when I went out for choir practice in fifth grade?
Oh no, what happened?
The choir guy, the guy running the show, made me stay after class and put my ear on the piano.
What?
He said, you're tone deaf, son.
It is one of my favorite things is to ask Wes to sing.
What did you go to? Like a 1940s high school? Did he hit you with a ruler after? What's going on?
Just put my ear on the piano.
He was a good Catholic boy in Cincinnati.
We weren't wimps, Greg. Come on.
All right. That was odds and ends. And before we get Ross Tucker in here, Greg, we did want to hear. I'm always interested in the boss's takes on the football world. So I was curious what fearless prediction you may live to regret on the 2016 season.
No, I thought you guys did a great job with the fearless fan fiction that you hope happens in 2016.
Fearless fan fiction.
2016. Mark for the fifth straight year, you know, believing too much in the Browns, and Dan for the fifth straight year, hoping that Tom Brady falls apart.
That's fair.
Fearless, you're not wrong.
Fearless fan fiction.
Oh, that was fair.
I'm going to go with that the Super Bowl defending champion Denver Broncos will not make the playoffs in 2016. that their fall will be steep. It'll remind you a little bit of that Ravens team who also replaced their top two quarterbacks after going to the Super Bowl. Mm. They don't make it. They're just
you're saying
middle of the road team.
The team that
I don't think they'll be as bad as that.
The
Ravens.
Untested rookie and late period Mark Sanchez won't make the playoff. That's really fearless.
They do have the best defense that we've seen in a long time, and they did have just about the worst quarterback play you could imagine last year, and they won a Super
That's
Bowl
fair.
With it. I kind of came.
Now you're arguing against yourself.
No, I'm saying. That's my argument that it's fearless. I have to admit, I stepped into the studio today, and my plan was to go Broncos and Panthers.
What about Carolina?
But I don't believe that. You can't force things you truly don't believe. So I truly believe that the Broncos will not make the playoffs. I think that's somewhat bold. I want it to be something that when we do our predictions in September, I'm not going to back away from. I'll stick with that. That they're out. They're going to be an 8-9 win team.
I don't believe that Tom Brady will be. So just really hang those onions.
Well, you should only say things if you believe it.
You're being disingenuous.
This is where we disagree on podcasts in general. If you're saying something,
that was
you at least
the
should mis-
no
it.
The misconception with what I said was that I thought he would take a step back and kind of be like a top 15 guy.
Okay.
Not the Peyton Manning fall off the cliff.
Well, no, I get that.
Is that bold?
I would say so, considering he's played better than ever his last two seasons.
I'm sticking with my Browns one. I'll tell you, last year around this time, I authored one of these like clickbait articles that was somewhat ordered on Connor and I to do new teams will make the playoffs, fives that won't. I picked the Broncos to not make it. Heard probably from over the course of the season 6,000 or 7,000 people. So you're going to get on some radars here.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe you can block some more people after hearing
absolutely.
That.
That's right. We did some research. Well, some clown up in the Bay Area got like a think piece written about him over how many people he blocks, or he's a reporter up there, and he blocks like over 6,000 people, and I was like, forget about that. He doesn't deserve a think piece.
Wait, I don't even know the backstory.
I don't know. Who was it?
It was Tim Kawakami.
Oh. So Tim Kawakami got a feature written on him about how he was the king of the blocks. Because he blocks everyone on Twitter. And I was like, we got Dikembe Mutombo over here at NFL Media and Chris Wessling. Where's his feature piece?
I went to check how many blocks I had, and the app that you used told me it was dysfunctional because I had blocked too many people they couldn't count.
That's awesome. And then we all checked. So Wes was literally incalculable.
But you did check a few years ago, and you were...
I was over 2,000 a few years ago. Okay. So I imagine it has to be in the 6,000 to 7,000 range.
mine was at like 37. Mark, yours was even lower than that.
It was 4, but I don't use that. I'll mute people. I don't block.
You only had like 10 mutes, though. You're a forgiving guy. No, nothing.
Mark's still, he's a nice guy. Mark's always been a nice guy. And Greg.
Connor had 130 or so. I had 650.
That's a pretty nice number.
Greg's really been coming on lately. I've been proud of him.
Oh, Greg's blocking is a little more spiteful, too.
Mine's silent. No, mine's, I just, you know, something I don't like, you're blocking.
Yeah. Like you hiss at him.
Yes.
Yeah. Mine is like, I don't need you in my life.
Yeah, Wes, if you are a fan of the Seahawks, even if you're one of his best friends, he'll block you.
If you're
Seahawks related, you're going to get blocked.
There's a difference between a 12 and a Seahawks fan. 12s all get blocked.
What if you had to, in a battle royale, face all the people that you had blocked?
Bring it on.
One versus 6,000.
All right, folks. You know, we don't usually have people in the studio. We don't like outsiders. We like to, you know, stay the hive mentality. But
what a welcoming way to introduce
the guest. Sometimes you make exceptions. And this man right now to my left, former NFL player. He's now at NBC Sports Network. Listen to this guy's resume. Sirius XM NFL Radio, Sports on Earth, and, of course, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast at Ross Tucker NFL. It is Ross Tucker.
Yay, me.
I flew
6 hours out here just to get that intro from Hanzus.
Wow. Was it worth
6 hours. And I love that he said I'm to his left for those people watching at home.
Yeah, no, we like to give people an idea of like the
no. They
spatial
say that.
Setup.
They say that in the radio. They say left to right on your radio dial. I never understood that one either. The one thing I've always wanted to ask you guys.
Sure.
I'm just gonna take over real quick.
No, go ahead. If you're right. I'll see you later.
So I've listened several times. What is the heroes thing? Why are you guys all heroes? What's the room full of heroes? Where does that come from?
Basically, just because we claim to.
Isn't it obvious?
Yeah, you're here now. You're seeing.
Look at the man in front of you.
It's that, innate. Not all see that.
It's called, I would call it absurdist humor.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, none of us, I mean, there's no war veterans in here. There's not, there's maybe a high level of cowardice.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was a joke on some level. I didn't know what was like the.
On every level.
Greg saved a cat from a tree once.
Did? In a strawberry truck. So Ross is here. Ross, like I said, has got a lot of stuff going on, but he's also the reason why, and one of the reasons why you should listen to and watch Ross is because he comes from a place of experience, an former offensive lineman, played 7 years in the NFL, and Mark, I know you did a little research on the old Tuck Bomb before we got on today.
Yeah, well, I love coaches. I think that it's a fascinating profession, and I just was circling through some names that you've been tied to during your career, and I'm kind of fascinated. We got Marty Schottenheimer, Hugh Jackson, Steve Spurrier, Dave Campo, should have put him at the top of the list, Bruce Coslett, Mike Zimmer, Greg Williams, Mike Mularkey, Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, and Matt Patricia, I believe, was a position coach for you?
Yeah, he was actually the assistant offensive line coach when I was an offensive line with the Patriots.
Mm. Of these guys, I mean –
who do you like the least?
Right. Well, yes.
Personally or as a coach?
Personally.
Personally.
So, you know what's amazing?
Yeah.
I had 9 different NFL head coaches.
Wow.
That's kind of hard to do when you only play 7 years.
Crazy.
Wow.
But ever play with a winning team?
Yeah, I went to playoffs a couple times. Yeah,
Belichick on this list.
Patriots 05, Redskins 07, which was an amazing year because I was on IR, so I don't know if I really said I played for that team. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? The year I played the most – and had the best year, 2004, Buffalo Bills, 9-7. Look it up, winning team.
Wait, that was the team that lost to the Steelers playing their Willie backups Parker? To miss the playoffs? Am I
yes,
right?
Ouch. Yes.
Why you got to bring that up?
And you know what's you know what's crazy about that? So you guys will appreciate this, or maybe you won't, but I'm going to tell the story anyway. So we're 9-6. We started off 0-4. It was Mike Mularkey's first year, so that relates to football now. Mm-hmm. Titans fans, we're talking about you, blah, 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 blah. Mularkey, first year, 0-4. We go 9-2 in the next 11. Mm-hmm. So we're 9-6 in the last game. The Steelers have locked up the number one seed. So Roethlisberger, I don't think, plays at all. It was his rookie year. Tommy Maddox plays. And two guys made a bunch of plays that we had never heard of. We were beating – the Steelers starters played like the first quarter, maybe the first quarter and a half.
I remember this game.
Then they started to replace him. I remember after like our first drive, I hit Joey Porter after a play. Or like, during a play, and I said, Joey, how long are you guys playing today? And he looked at me and said, long enough to kick your ass.
Sounds like Joey Porter.
I was like, that's a pretty good answer.
He hasn't changed.
12 years later, he's still on the field. Like,
get off the field.
But we were beating their starters. Then they put the backups in, and some guy we had never really heard of had 2 sacks. Turned out to be James Harrison.
Oh. Yeah.
All I remember thinking is that's the strongest guy I've ever seen. He's like 5'10". You guys ever met him in person?
Yeah, he's not a big guy.
He is like 5'10", and I had seen on tape him kill Jason Whittle on a counter, and I said to the coach was like, Tuck, you got to kick him out on this trap. And I said, I don't know, Coach, are you watching this? And Trey Teague's like, just let him, who's our starting center, he said, just let him cut his outside leg. Just let him cut his outside leg. And Coach's like, no, you got to kick him out. You got to kick him out. After the meeting, we walk out, and Trey said, hey, if you try to kick him out, they're going to put you in one of them halo things in the hospital, and I'm not going to come visit you. So I'll never forget that. But anyway, in that game, we ended up, Willie Parker and James Harrison went off. We lost. We did not make the playoffs. But I had a really sizable playing time bonus. So I locked it in after that game. I had to get 80% of the offensive snaps that year. If we had won, we would have played at Indy on the RCA Dome turf. And this is like the player stuff that people don't think about. I figured out the math. I probably would have had to play at least like 29 plays, depending on how many offensive snaps we had in that playoff game, because playoff games count for the bonus. Mm-hmm. I had a herniated disc in my back. I was taking a lot, you know, stop. Percocet, Loratab, Flexerol, a shot of Toradol in my butt to play.
That's like one of Wes's weekends, by the way.
But anyway, it's crazy because after the game, I was so upset. I was so sad that we lost because I never made the playoffs before and like, you know, we'd worked so hard to make the playoffs, but I was also so happy that we lost because I had locked in a lot of money and didn't have to play for another week, go to the RCA Dome, which had the hardest turf in the world. And, like, if I get hurt on the 20th play, I'll just tell you guys, you can probably look it up. If I get hurt in the 20th play, yes, I get the $18,000 for the playoff game, and I miss out on $350,000 playing time.
Oh,
bonus.
Man.
So that's the things that, like, I remember after the game, I was engaged to my wife at the time and fiance at the time, and my father-in-law, he knew I had locked in the playing time bonus, and he knew the last five games I had played with a herniated disc in my back, and, like, he hugged me. It was like a moment. It was like,
wow.
It was like.
He was like, great coaching malarkey. Way to sit on way to sit on the ball.
Oh, man. Bills fans still bring up that game.
Poor people. They still have no – the only team that hasn't had a playoff team in the 2000s, which is outrageous.
Right. But to answer your question, my favorite coach was Schottenheimer. The best coach is probably Belichick, but not my favorite.
See that? Bad guy. That's what he's saying. He can't say it because he respects him, but he's saying he's a bad guy. Greg, deal with it.
You know, well, I would just say what's really interesting about the Patriots, I don't know if you guys know this or not.
It's
100% negative reinforcement, which has obviously been successful for them. That and having the best football player of all time has really helped them.
That's my approach as a manager.
I noticed that when you make – you don't even let your guys eat lunch like decent human beings. Oh, like slave away in front of their desk.
It was so good to see Ross see that.
I had an internship summer before junior year.
I do not make
college.
You. You guys go
that.
Back there. You just do it.
Can you Ross let Ross talk?
To roll with it, Greg.
So anyway, just so you know, for the Patriots, every day of practice and after every game, the first thing they show – are the five worst plays from the day before. So, like, your major motivating factor is to not be on Belichick's low-light tape the next day where he's like, look at this. What are you? And it's not good.
That's a pretty good Belichick, by the way.
I was amazed because when I was there, they signed me midway through the 05 year, and they were going for their third straight Super Bowl, and it was my fourth team already. I'd played for Redskins, Cowboys, Bills, and then Patriots. And it was the least happy team I had ever been on. There was the most, like, unhappy guys. I'm like, this is unbelievable.
He's John Voight in Friday Night Lights or Varsity Blues.
Yes.
He gets results, but goddamn it, they hate him.
No, but you know what?
I don't believe it.
That was a particularly pressure-filled season. Coming off two titles with a team that wasn't great.
Right. Well, but I also say this. We're playing the Jaguars in that first round of the playoffs. And he says, you know, every coach before every game says, you know, at the start of the week, we got to take care of the ball. We got to, you know, they just say the generic stuff. He's like, most important thing to this game by far is Jimmy Smith crossing patterns on third down. That's the key to the game. And, like, what he'll do is he'll literally call it, like, a practice squad offensive lineman on Thursday and be like, Ross Tucker, what's the most important thing in this game? I'll be like, Jimmy Smith crossing patterns on third down. Like, something like that, right?
Yeah.
We go in the game. And he reinforces it so much, and it's so specific that I wasn't even suited up for the game. I was up in, like, a skybox or something. But on third down, I was looking at Jimmy Smith. Like, I didn't know what the heck was going to happen in that game other than Jimmy Smith was not going to catch a darn third down crossing pattern for a first down. He didn't, and we won by, like, 30 points. And then I actually did play the next week. We lost to the Broncos.
Right.
In the division around the game that made Ben Watson famous for chasing down champion from behind like 100 yards.
Jake Plummer's finest NFL moment, really.
Let me
divisional round game.
Let me pick your offensive lineman brain here.
Let's do it.
So we
wait before we do that. If we're gonna talk offensive linemen, we got to go down to the lab. Let's go.
All right.
Oh,
it's time to do some scientist heat here. I mean, Ross Tucker. A veteran.
Walking what's that
down.
Noise? What's
we're
that
walking down right
the
now.
Steps.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's the steps of you walking down.
Got it.
Now we're down the steps. Now we're in the lab. Now this is the scientist lab. This is where the real football nerds talk. The real football men. Go ahead, Wes.
So
I'll be upstairs.
So he said the real football nerds. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah. I'll be making grilled cheese upstairs. Later.
So none of us in this room claim to be able to evaluate offensive line play where we're watching condensed games, but there are people who do. And when you see a site like Pro Football Focus, even as a former professional offensive lineman, can you feel great about your analysis of an offensive lineman without knowing his assignment in a game?
Well, I can feel very good about it, yes. But I can also tell you with 100% certainty that I can't have 100% certainty on who messed up on certain things. If you ask the Pro Football Focus guys, what I respect about them is they know that they don't know what guys are supposed to do. So they just evaluate what the guy tries to do. And they feel like over time, given a large enough sample size, it'll kind of even out. But like, I'll give an example. You know, several years ago, I think they had Brandon Albert as maybe their second best offensive tackle or something like that. And I was told by the Chiefs, you know, people that would know, that he was good for like 2 mental errors a game. That is like, mental errors as a professional are totally unacceptable. And a mental error is like, okay, you blocked the wrong guy. Well, the right guy goes and smokes your quarterback. It's a strip sack, return for a touchdown, and you lost. Thanks for playing
today. Oh, by the way, your quarterback's got a concussion.
Yes. So the biggest issue I have with them would be, you know, I can think of at least probably one play game when I played where I would get a negative for it from them, but I was really just trying to save somebody else's butt that messed up. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I stepped down. I saw the tackle step down too, so I bailed to try to get, you know, try to cut the linebacker's knee so he didn't. But all in all, I think those sites do a really, really good job.
Yeah. So you think by the time they have 16 games worth of sample size, they get it pretty right?
But not in cases of like Brandon Albert. That's a tricky one.
Well, I think, you know, I think they rate Evan Mathis a little higher than I would. You know, I think like they
I think
put,
the Eagles agree with
do.
You.
Yeah, I think
so. Does the other 32 teams?
Yeah, like they put more of a premium, I think, on run blocking than I think NFL teams do. Would probably be another way to describe it. You know, NFL, they want you to be a good run blocker, but not many guys are really getting vertical movement anyway. You know, and they want to be efficient with your blocks. I love that. What are we doing now? We're just pouring more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Some beaker stuff. Mark's,
this
Mark's
is a concoction that you're pouring together.
Mark's, yeah. Mark's here too.
We're just pouring more stuff. And Mark's here too.
Yeah. I'm upstairs cooking grilled cheese with Dan. Having a glass of vodka.
But, you know, at the end of the day, the way the NFL is, you really get paid for pass blocking. Which, I mean, I wish it wasn't that way because I was not a great pass blocker. That was like a flaw. But, like, you look at the guys, Luke Jokel and Fisher, and Fisher's actually gotten a little better. It was a really fun project for me to make fun of him the first couple of years, but he's actually
–
yeah, he's actually – like last year he was decent, but those guys are paid to pass block. And anybody that says anything different is kidding themselves. Evan Mathis is an average pass blocker. So Pro Football – and I like him as a guy. He's a good player, but Pro Football Focus ranks him really high because of what they believe is his efficiency in the run game. But I think that's mitigated a decent amount by him not being a great pass blocker, in my mind.
Moving away from the line, I think we reached out to you before you came on today. Who do you want to talk about? Kirk Cousins was the name that came up. What are your feelings about Kirk Cousins?
You know,
playing on a one-year, $20 million deal.
So I don't understand why people don't value last year as much as I do. In general, Kirk Cousins, Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Fitzpatrick, like even to some extent Brian Hoyer, obviously had that horrible game, but like last year matters. Like that's the most recent sample size we have, and it's a pretty big sample size. But with all these guys, it's like for Tyrod Taylor, it's like, he's only ever done it once. I mean, it was his first year starting, and the guy was, what, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, ran for 600 yards?
Listen, I make the same argument about Ryan Fitzpatrick in this room, and everybody says this guy's a total journeyman. He stinks. It's a joke that the Jets are excited trying to get him back.
Which is what
all I'm looking at is last season, his first with the Jets, his first or returning to
a partnership
with Chan Gailey. I'm only judging it on his year with the Jets. He was one of the best quarterbacks the Jets have had in decades. Now, I know that last game counts for something, and he threw 3 picks, and that's really spoiled the narrative of what was otherwise a really great season for a franchise that hasn't had many good seasons at quarterback. So that's why the Jets want him back. It shouldn't be such a laughable thing that they do. That's what I'm talking about.
No, he is a journeyman, but and I'm not saying he's going to do this, but Kurt Warner was a guy that played NFL Europe and Arena League before he showed the ability to play at that high of a level. Rich Gannon was a guy that played for the Vikings and the Chiefs.
Once they
places.
Had their good season, then their teams rewarded them with paychecks. It's not just the Jets who aren't paying Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's every team in the league who says, we don't believe you can do this again.
Right.
And we believe
that's separate.
Well, let me ask you this, though. What team do you think should have?
I don't think any team should have. I think a team should have signed him as a backup, not a
starter. But what team do you think should have considered it? Like, if you actually go through and look at the different quarterback situations around the league, like the Cleveland Browns, for example, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick's much better than Robert Griffin III, and they would win another game or two. But with the Browns, their long-term approach, like, how do they value that? How do
doesn't fit their franchise.
And if you look at every situation, I think you could make the same argument pretty much across the board. I think he's going to play really well again. I think Kirk Cousins is going to play really well again. I'm a believer in Kirk Cousins. I think Tyrod Taylor is going to play pretty well.
So it's good. You should really move over to closer to Chris. That is the Cousins corner over there. Kissing Cousins. They're the big fans of Cousins.
So Greg, you're the guy that, because the guy's name isn't Drew Brees or Tom Brady, or because they haven't done it for five years, because I get the sense you don't believe in Fitzpatrick, you don't believe in Cousins. What do you guys do every day? You blog about this stuff and you write about this stuff and we watch the games. Does like 16 games last year? Does it matter?
That question might be better directed to Doug Whaley for why he won't pay Tyrod Taylor.
Because he doesn't have to.
Of course,
because he doesn't have to, and because they it's pretty telling that in mid-October of last year, they came out. Well, they didn't say it, but they leaked the word to Ian Rappaport. EJ Manuel can take this job. So, obviously, Tyrod Taylor isn't doing something, and that something is throwing over the middle of the field.
So I'm getting a great feel for all you. You are the guy that, based on what
don't
the
put
team
Wes in
does,
a box.
Based on what the team does, they're showing us what the guy
that
is.
That is one of many factors, the data that we can read, living 3,000 miles
agreed,
away
but
the
then, agreed, but then what you're saying by that is that all teams have all knowledge, and they know what they're doing.
I'm saying that's one part of the factor. Another part of the factor, one part of the data is that Tyrod Taylor is built small, likes to run, already got injured last year, and is probably not the best candidate to stay healthy for 16 games.
Well, I just think they're not paying him because they don't have to. They signed him to a very smart contract last year.
I'm sure that's
and they're. I mean, you're also talking about, you said, well, what does Doug Whaley think? I mean, I could give you five things that Doug Whaley said and done recently.
Doug Whaley has overrated EJ Manuel a long time.
Yeah, Doug Whaley's the guy that drafted EJ Manuel.
Right, but that also speaks to their opinion on Tyrod. I don't think Doug Whaley was the source telling Ian Rappaport this. It was one of their coaches.
Ross, you're big on social media. Is it cool if we just make the headline here, though? Ross, Jets are missing out on next Kurt Warner.
Yes.
That's basically what you
said. Let's good scientist talk, guys. Let's go. Let's go upstairs.
Is there a sound effect? Is there?
Well, if the Irishman steps up. There we go.
Oh, there we go.
You quit talking, you could hear it.
Quiet down. All right, listen, we got to wrap up the segment. But you know why? Because Ross Tucker's got some Princeton bros he's got to have some daddy pops with.
Daddy sodas. you know I called them daddy sodas?
Yeah, I do. Plugged in on everything.
Whoa.
I'm plugged in on the podcast universe.
Wait. Yeah. You're from New York, right?
Yeah.
Daddy pops?
That's what I maybe I misremember.
That's my fault.
Because you're Cincinnati. Sometimes. You're a Midwest pop.
Yeah, I'm a soda guy where I'm from.
Dude, I'm in the state where it splits. People in Pittsburgh say pop.
Really?
Which weirds me out.
Cincinnati does too, yeah.
Texas does too.
I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania, near Philly, and we always said Coke. Like, I have a Coke?
Oh, yeah.
I say beer, and I drink it.
Are you the guy at the bar is like, I'll take a beer, and then they go, which kind? You're like, any kind. Just send the guy away.
I've probably had conversations like that.
I've seen it.
Right. I love that. I love, by the way, that Team Ohio over here has a uniform, has a plaid uniform. Yeah. Team Ohio.
We are Wes and I are in our patented
Team Ohio.
Very masculine men.
It's all we wear.
Chop down a tree after this. All right. So he is Ross Tucker, and again, you get to check him on NBC Sports Network, Sirius XM, NFL Radio, Sports on Earth, where he writes, and of course the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and at Twitter, hit him up at Ross Tucker. NFL, it was a real pleasure to have you in the studio.
Dude, good to see you guys in person. I'll fly out every week, 6 hours each way, for these glorious 17 minutes. It was awesome.
Right. It was a lot of fun. So Ross Tucker, check him out. And there he goes, Ross Tucker, out the door. And we got to get out the door as well, gentlemen. We'll be back on Thursday with yet another Around the NFL podcast. We'll have a guest from inside the NFL media sphere tomorrow. So a lot of people in the studio this week, a lot of friends of the Around the NFL podcast. Is that news to you, Greg?
I'm looking forward to it, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll find out. We'll talk after the show. So get excited, everybody, until Thursday. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the Mailman, the Boss, and the Irishman. Got a chance to get up on Rushmore, baby! Till Thursday! One day we will die. One day we will die. So enjoy this time we have together, because one day we will die.